Breaking, Justin. According to a guy on Twitter. I mean, he must be someone. He's got 300,000 followers.
Okay, I trust
Daniel
him.
Radcliffe. At Daniel RPK.
Okay.
He says that Pedro Pascal has finished filming his Last of Us Season 2 stuff. Which, yeah, I bet.
Did they just start filming yesterday?
And just like a day and a half on set, right? Yeah, I mean, yeah. Because I'm assuming that also they probably already did some of that flashback stuff when they filmed the first season.
Potentially, yeah. And
right, like I would think that they would, just to make sure that ages
and even like ages and stuff like that. But like timeline like stuff, or like making a TV film, you would probably not want him on set as long as you would need him on set money wise.
I bet he's an expensive sort of, yeah.
Yeah. And specifically for this, there's not like, it's a lot of it takes place in one major set. There's like one major set and two other sets that he's in, if I'm correct in this. So, you know, they're probably just filming all the scenes in one set first, and then they do these other like little ones and move on to the next one. Yeah.
And then you're done.
And then they take a break, go mini golfing, and then come back and finish filming.
You know, this is interesting. Like, the way we're actually kind of like talking around this is kind of fun. But like, we're going to talk about this a little bit more on our bonus episode, if you're interested, patreon.com/hitboxpod, about like what like constitutes a spoiler. It was not intentional to tie these two things together. But I think I want to mention this when we talk about it, because I do think it is, interesting, you know? Yeah, but apparently he is all wrapped up.
Yeah, I'm just interested. You're to the point where you might not want to watch The Last of Us 2 TV series.
I'll probably start it. I'll probably start it just to see. But no, I don't think so.
I'm just interested to see like the adaptation of it. I think the least interesting answer is going to be to tell it the same way that it's told in the video game.
Yeah. I worry, and hey, maybe this is a whole other conversation too. I worry that like that, I think that first game is a story that could be told in many different mediums. I think that the ego death that happens in the second game is kind of a uniquely video game thing. With the way that you sort of attach your self to a protagonist, and then when, you know, everything sort of switches around as it does in that game. I don't know how you do that in a TV show. You know what I mean? Or at least like you can do that in a TV show, but like I think it's different, right? It feels different, that's for sure.
Yeah, I feel like in the video game, obviously you're the one you're controlling the characters, but I think like in The Last of Us, the thing with that is like you're not actually, you don't have agency over the choices that are being made.
No, but I do think that there is some level of like that. Like to me, what makes that game so interesting as a game is the way that it plays with the relationship that players have with a character.
Mm-hmm.
Because yes, you're right. Like you have no agency in that story, like zero. Right. But like because it's a video game, you still have some relationship to that character that sort of extends beyond them just being a character, because there is a bit more of that self-expression and whatever else, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So like, for example, talk spoilery like around it, like the fight that happens in the theater, I think is a really, really interesting thing, because there is this conflict of interests, in my opinion, of like, what character do you sort of project yourself onto more? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think you can do that in TV shows, though, because I think like we inherently are going to root for someone. And as someone who watches sports all the time, I love watching sports that I don't like a game that I don't have a vested interest in, because like I get so emotionally attached if it's my team versus another team, obviously. But when there's two teams that I don't have that like rooting interest for, like my Gonzaga Bulldogs, when I'm watching just like, you know, two teams play each other, I find myself, no matter how neutral I come in with those, leaning towards me wanting one to win and the other one to not win. And I think the viewer will kind of treat it in that way, that they have this like kind of like rooting interest in both teams, but somehow, whether it is just their own personal feelings or how they've been kind of portrayed to us, we are going to be feeling one way or another about the characters. And like, we'll have like, oh, I want this person to win, but also like, is that the good thing? Mm. I think we can't have that feeling. I think the biggest difference between a video game and a TV show is the camera and how you pace the story in it, which I think also is going to be weird for this.
I also saw, I mean, these are also just like rumors stuff. Rumor. Or maybe it wasn't. Maybe this was one of those, like, you know, like sometimes they were like, hey, like here are all of these like actors who are going to play these characters. I don't remember if this happened from one of those or if this was just like one of those like rumor things. They said like, I heard that there's like going to be another faction introduced into The Last of Us Part Two. And like, hey, don't do that.
Are they going to are the clickers going to be like sentient all of a sudden? Be like, we are the overlord of the clickers.
They kind of did that with the big rat king guy.
Well, maybe that character will have a voice. You know what I mean?
Perhaps.
Hello. But I even think about like
at the end of that game too, when like they do introduce a third faction, like Neil Druckmann said in an interview, like, you know, there's no bad guys or good guys in The Last of Us. It's all like everyone's really complicated. And I'm like, what about the slave murderer people? Those guys are complicated characters. What are you talking about?
maybe that is the third faction.
It was supposed to be a new faction.
Yeah, they seem to be pretty bad. You're right. Cannibalism. Yeah. Anyway, well, what about the cannibals? About 9 hours, are those people good?
David?
Name? Well, yeah, is David? Yeah. He was just helping his people. Though I think this is just me. He seemed to be much more of a bad guy and portrayed as a bad guy in the TV show. Not that he wasn't in the video game, but like how they made the people interact with him, I think led you to believe that he wasn't good for his people.
It's also too, yeah, 100%. Also, like, because I'm trying to remember how it's shown in the show. Like, we see him with his people before Ellie meets him, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's kind of very you're right, cult-like. You get this feeling already. Whereas what I think the game does a really, really good job of is, like, he is suspect, but he's also pretty normal. Like he's charming, but he's also, like, one of those things where, like, she's unsure about him you're unsure about him. It's good.
Yeah.
It's a good video game. And Nolan North, incredible performance. What happened to him? Where's he been?
Nolan North?
He's in the Avengers, Tony Stark.
Oh, yeah. That kind of killed his career, I guess.
What else has he done? He had a cameo in the Uncharted movie. It's kind of funny. It's actually pretty funny.
Nolan North video games. He just got replaced by Troy Baker.
Troy Baker. Yeah. Apparently he's Penguin and Superman in Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League. He's Deadpool in Midnight Suns. Okay, he's getting work. Getting work at Hitbox. What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to Hitbox episode number 186. My name is Peter Hunspetek, and joining me, as always, is my wonderful friend and co-host, Justin Makovich. Justin, how are you? Doing all right?
I'm dying.
Yeah, you were telling me about your health issues.
I'm dying.
Intense.
I went to the urgent care, which if you know me, there's something wrong with me, right?
You're not a doctor's man.
I don't like doctors. I don't trust this medicine. I prefer grit and dirt to get through illnesses. Leg broken, just rub some dirt in it. It'll fix it.
186 episodes into this podcast, what if we revealed, like, and we're like very deep into the anti-vax?
Anyway, but like I generally going to doctors for me, it provides some anxiety for me, but also like I had a lot of stuff when I was in college where I had some stomach issues and just kind of like they never really could pinpoint it. And I just started to like, not that I had this distrust in doctors, but I think a lot of times we are going to a doctor for something and they're trying to find the right thing and they can't really find the right thing. And anyway, I don't like going to doctors. It also provides anxiety for me. And yeah. So I go to urgent care. And I get there and they were just testing because I have like a sinus thing, but then my eye was red and then my vision was a little blurry. So then I was like, I was like, yeah, my vision's a little blurry too. They're like, oh, let's do an eye test. So I go to do an eye test and they're like, all right, first read this. And I'm like, all right, I'm always been really good at these. I don't wear glasses. I'm good eyesight. And I can usually read everything. And they're like, read as low as you can. And I go, ooh. Which was a bad sign. And then I'm like,
yeah, it's not great.
I can't really read that second to the last one. And they're like, all right, why don't you cover your left eye? Because my right eye was the bad one. And I'm like, okay. And I could read the same line all the way up. And they're like, all right, now, why don't you just try covering your right eye? And I cover my right eye. And I was just like that moment when I'm like, I can't fucking see.
I can't. Yeah.
Like literally anything. And it was like, can you see this line? And I was like, no. And they pointed one up. They're like, can you see this line? And I was like, no. I'm like, can you see this line? And we're on like the third line at this point. I'm like, not really. I can kind of make out the letters, but I can't see it. So then I had to go to an eye doctor and I apparently have a viral infection. I'm on a steroid now, so I'm just getting swole, getting yoked. But boy, it's just one of those things. Like now I'm worried I'm going to have to wear glasses and I'm blind, or this is just a sinus infection that is hurting me.
I hope you are okay.
Thank you.
Thoughts and prayers.
Thank you. But it's also like if I can't read, that makes my job real hard. I'm an English teacher.
Yeah, as a language teacher, it's a little tough.
What I'd do there.
Well, maybe we'll shift you over to doing the podcast full time.
But how can
we've both been thinking about it.
I am having trouble reading the documents in front of me right now. So like.
Here, let me just, I'm just going to highlight everything. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to click. This a bunch of times, so I'm gonna make it size. Can you read this better? Now everything is size 49.
Yep. What's up? Discord.
Yeah, there you go. Speaking of Discord, you can join our Discord server. The link to that is in the description of this episode. You can also follow us on Twitter at HitboxPod. You can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/HitboxPod. Become a $1 podcast producer or a $3 deluxe podcast producer like our lovely deluxe podcast producers, Jay Null, GKS, and Josh Durham. Every single week, those deluxe podcast producers get an additional 30-minute bonus episode. This week, as I mentioned before, we're talking about spoilers and what makes a spoiler. And like, do spoilers matter? I think they do, but I also think there's nuance and context to that. So we're going to talk about that. So if you're interested in that, you can find us there. Otherwise, you can rate this episode in your podcast player of choice. Justin, here's a preview of what's coming up in the news. Larian will not be doing Baldur's Gate 4. GTA 6 might just be delayed. And every game ever came out this week, and we are playing none of them. That's not true. I think you dipped in. If I had to guess, I think I know which game you've dipped into here. But that's just a taste of what's coming up. You want to just start talking about those games? Head to the Metacritic Roundup?
Yeah, let's do it.
Metacritic Roundup.
There are 5 games in the Metacritic Roundup. We talked about 2 of them last week. We talked about Rise of the Ronin and Dragon's Dogma 2. Let me hit you with these scores here. Rise of the Ronin, 76 on the PlayStation 5. That is, it's an exclusive, I think. It's not anywhere else. Yeah. Surprised that it's not even on PC. But
yeah.
I've seen people saying like this is good. It's fine. It's like Assassin's Creed meets Neo, kind of. But it's not something that is like particularly. I don't want to say it's not special because like it seems like people are having fun with it, but it's not anything that is going to like change your life in terms of being like a really new experience that you've never like had before, whether that's Sekiro, whether that's Neo, whether that is Assassin's Creed. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it leans a lot more towards like the Assassin's Creed stuff, mixing a little bit with some of that like Neo combat, but even not really. It's just a lot of like a lot of actiony, get new loot, make the numbers go up, get a little stronger, explore, get a cool hang glider.
Yeah, that looks kind of sick. There's guns in this too, I think.
You know what I mean? That's what they sound like in the time of the Ronin. I hear the story is kind of interesting.
Oh, really? I've not really seen many people talking about that.
Yeah.
Do you know what it is?
Like Assassin's Creed, it kind of like weaves into like actual like history stuff with it. So I think at the very least that makes it kind of cool. Again, am I going to play this game today? I don't think so. But if it was around, I might dabble in it.
I think it sort of speaks to how I feel about, is it Ninja Theory or is it Team Ninja? I never know. It is. Oh, this was published by Sony. I didn't realize that. I guess that's why it's PS5 like exclusive. Team Ninja.
Team Ninja.
Their games tend to be like, for me, like there's better versions of this. This is like, it's a fine entry into this genre. It's a fine entry into this thing. So if like this specific thing is your cup of tea, like give it a shot. But that's how I felt about their other stuff, right? About just like, hey, there's a better version of this. So why don't you just go play that instead? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. I hear people talking like how it's ugly. I don't think it's that ugly.
It's fine. Yeah, it's good.
Like,
guys, stop.
Just stop complaining about this stuff, people. But I guess
it's just like, yeah.
I guess that's just a me thing, though. Like, I'm not the kind of person who needs that kind of.
I'll play anything if it's fun.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, like if it's fun, I'll play anything. And also, like, this doesn't even look bad.
No,
like,
no,
like,
no.
That's the other
no,
thing
no,
is like.
No.
On top of all of that, like, it actually looks quite good.
There were some performance issues, I think, at launch that I was seeing people post online, like some pop-in stuff like that. But, like, that's a little less excusable than it looking a little whatever. But
yeah,
what game doesn't start off with some bugs nowadays?
I'll tell you what does. Dragon's Dogma
2. Oh,
apparently is having has some, like, pretty significant performance issues. Apparently there is a patch that was issued today or maybe yesterday, and it fixed a lot of those or gave you more options if you wanted to like turn like ray tracing down in favor of like performance and stuff like that. But Dragon's Dogma 2 on the PS5, it scored an 87, on the PC an 89, and the Xbox Series X an 86. This thing is hot. People are big into this. I'll be honest, I'm interested in this. It looks kind of From Soft D. I've never played the original one.
I bought it, but I don't. I never played it. I have it on my Switch.
The first one?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I've heard it's good. I mean, like, I've heard good things about this series, but as I mentioned, people are saying there's like performance issues and whatever. And we were sort of talking about this before the show, but like, in all of the reviews that because I tend to like listen to more reviews on podcasts and stuff like that than like read them nowadays, just with how my time works. I don't know what the fuck kind of game this is. I mean, like, it's like a third person action game, sure, but like, I don't know what the like objective is. I don't really know
the loop,
much about it in terms of
like the general loop, the gameplay itself. Like, I see it, I recognize the kind of game it is, but like, I don't know like what it is. Is this true? I saw like a clip of this that when you cook meat in the game, they show like a realistic steak.
Yes.
Is that?
It's not like a realistic steak.
It's a video of a steak.
Okay.
That's like a real thing in this game.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh. Let's see.
I saw this in a tweet, and basically the person was like, how lazy are these devs? Which, like, anytime anyone says like a dev is lazy, like,
yeah, shut the fuck up.
it's just people, like, not to make light of it, but like, people didn't fucking see their families so that you could play this game.
Right.
Like, shut the fuck up.
And can you imagine at the morale boost at the studio the day they filmed that? They're just sitting there, like, cooking a steak on some kind of, like, campfire outside. They're all having a good time. They're like, we're going to remember this forever whenever we play this game.
But, like, here's the thing, though. Like, I kind of like that. I bet that they had some options. I bet that they were like, okay, we have to create some sort of animation for this, or like something has to happen when you cook. But they're like, we don't have the time, don't have the budget, whatever it is. So they're like, what if we just did this? And like, I saw the clip of it. Like, it works. Like, it's interesting. But
well, for me, it just further makes me unsure of what this game is. You know what I mean?
Yes, 100%. Like,
what's the tone here, guys?
It looks cool. It looks good. I will probably be dipping into this. I said that I would be playing it for work, which I still might be. But like, you know how sometimes stuff at work takes a while to happen? Is it like?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
well, the thing that gets me a little weird about this is the user reviews, the 6.1 versus the 8.7. And this is the whole controversy of the microtransactions, if I'm correct, right?
Yes.
Can you, like, if I'm correct, like, people believe that to like respec your character, you have to pay money to do that?
So you can pay money to get certain items, like to respec. There are certain like leveling items that you can pay money for. To change your appearance, you have to pay money, or you have to find, like, you pay money for these items to do this. For some fast travel things, you have to pay money to get items to do this. And basically, like, everyone was upset about this when it came out. And like, to a certain extent, like, I do understand that, I guess, but everyone who actually played the game, like people who like reviewed it, for example, all said like, no, I found these items. Like, I had plenty of these items throughout the game, you know? And it's one of those things where like, I think it's sort of on a case to case basis in terms of like when this sort of thing is okay or bad or whatever. It seems like in this game specifically, it's probably fine. Like it doesn't seem like it is a like pay to play sort of thing. Like, I think back to, there were two games that I played like in quick succession of one another that like really made me mad about this sort of thing. I think it was Assassin's Creed Odyssey and it was Middle Earth Shadow of War, or whatever the second one is.
Yeah, the Shadow of War was the second one. Yeah.
Where they like gate progression, but it's like, hey, you're going to have to grind in order to get this done, or just, you know, pay $20 and you can have enough skill points or whatever it was to get through. And like, that's the thing that I think, like, I find that to be unacceptable. Whereas like something like this, where it's just like, yeah, you can pay to have these items, or you can just play the game and you'll get the items anyway. Like, I think that's okay. It's the same thing with like Helldivers is like that, or even like plenty of games have like digital deluxe versions where it's like, you start the game with 3 skill points and you get this costume and whatever. Like, it doesn't really matter. What do you think?
Yeah, I think like depending on like Assassin's Creed Odyssey, like I've heard that criticism when the game first came out, and then I played it and I played that game like, bitch, I'm going to 100% this.
I was going to say you got really into it.
So like, I did 100% it, but like as I was playing, I just did all the side missions along the way, and that never really like stopped my progress. But I get people just want to kind of go to like critical path things a lot of the time, and if that's what they want to do, it kind of wasn't friendly for that. Critical path it. Yeah, I think there are some times where it's fine, sometimes where it's not. But ultimately, I think for this one, it doesn't seem like the outrage is warranted enough. But if people are outraged by it, don't play it.
Well, it's this thing where like, this happens so often where it's like people have decided something about a game that they haven't played. And like, we'll argue with like people who reviewed it, who like have fucking played the game. Like, I remember like the one I'm thinking about is, was it like the person who reviewed Cyberpunk for IGN was like in the comments with people like talking about it. And people were like saying like that she was wrong about certain aspects of it. And she's like, I fucking played the game.
Yeah.
Like, you haven't played the game.
Listen to me,
like,
please.
I don't want to tell you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So there you go. Dragon's Dogma 2. I'm interested in this, especially with the way people are talking about it. It seems interesting to me. Just the next game in the Metacritic roundup, Princess Peach Showtime, scoring a 75 on the Nintendo Switch. Justin, I've heard you talk about how your wife Claire is excited for this game. Have you played this? Has she played it? I want
to
hear about it.
So to be honest, no. She has actually been playing Mario Rabbids that was on sale.
Oh, sure.
The Spark of Hope she kind of has been playing back and forth. And it's kind of cool. Like, I think one good thing about Baldur's Gate is that when we were playing it, the thing that kind of slowed me down about it was the turn-based combat was something that she actually liked a lot. And that was like, mm-hmm. for me, as like someone who always tries like curate games for her that she would like, I was like, oh, this might be, she might actually like the Mario Rabbids game because it is turn-based. It is fun. I think it has its cute little like goofy exterior and while also having a pretty good turn-based like combat thing to it. So unfortunately, yeah. as of today, the 25th of March, she has not indulged in this game. But from all the reviews and what I've seen of this game is what I was expecting it to be.
Yes.
You know, it's not necessarily like an easy game, but one that is geared towards younger audiences that will have a little bit of depth to it should you try to 100% it. But that doesn't mean it won't be a fun time playing it. I mean, like, even just looking at some of these trailers and stuff like that, there's a million different things going on with this, and it seems like it's good Mario stuff.
Yeah, it seems like it is interesting enough, but it's not the sort of thing that I'm interested in checking out. Here's a quick little blurb, not blurb from the review, but Giovanni Colantonio, the gaming editor for Digital Trends reviewed the game and gave it, I think, a 6 out of 10 and said this. This is in his tweet about it. Princess Peach Showtime is a charming start for a new spin-off series that has a lot of room to grow. Some pacing and structure issues hold it back for me, but this is definitely a sound concept that I love to see explored further. The challenge of transformation hooks like this is that the first transformation is always the most fun. But how do you sustain that energy when you've played all of the cards early? Mario Wonder solves this brilliantly by putting a new effect in almost every level. That's the tension for me here. The best levels are the 10 power introduction levels. The 20 that follow don't riff on the abilities enough to keep the energy up. My brain is trained to ask what's next from the jump, but that's not a feeling that's built to sustain long term. So it sounds like a if you are interested in this and if they keep doing these, then like this is a great first step, but like maybe a little underbaked, imagined, if that makes sense.
It's almost like, too, like a lot of these games, too, like I often forget, like, I mean, you probably recognize this, you know, playing with your girlfriend, like I think we as gamers, like experienced gamers, are programmed to the language of gaming so much that
yes.
sometimes like what is like repetitive or simple for us turns out to not be for other people. And like, you know, just because you see this game like being as like a 75 doesn't mean it's bad. It just means it doesn't scratch that kind of itch like a game like Odyssey does, which I think is a fantastic use of creativity. Like literally everything you do to the very last level. When you see something, you're like, oh, wait, I could actually put my hat on this thing. This little big old spiky boy. I could speak of the spoilers. and they let you do it and stuff like that. And this one is just kind of like, hey, we introduce your gameplay and then we're going to keep going through it the whole time. But yeah,
it seems interesting enough. And I'm happy for people who, like we talked about, the studio that made this is the Kirby's Epic Yarn and Yoshi's Woolly World and like whatever people. So like this seems to be like right in line with that.
Glad they got away from the fabrics.
Yeah. Kind of an interesting trend there.
Yeah. I mean,
they fucking nailed that look, didn't they?
Oh man. Joof.
I always thought it looked really good. I'll say this is very funny on Metacritic. You go down and it says related games. And for Princess Peach Showtime, it is The Last of Us, Uncharted 2, God of War 2018, God of War 2005, God of War 2, and Devil May Cry. So, yeah, pretty related.
It almost seems those related games are like top scoring games, but, you know,
I wonder.
Okay.
Justin.
Oh, my God. Tomb Raider 1996 scored a 91. I bet you that ranking or that rating does not hold up in 2024. What do you think?
Wasn't there just a like remastered version of those games?
Yeah, but people hated them because they're like, you know, like quickly done remasters that don't really add to
it.
But I'm assuming like if I played that today, it would not be a 91.
Yeah, probably not, huh?
Yeah. Maybe.
It's always on here. Do you think... Ocarina of Time deserves its place as a top score.
Yeah, I think that generally holds up pretty well.
I can't be impartial because I love that game and like I know that game, but I would agree.
In terms of Zelda games, like there's a few things about it that are a little old in general, but like I think the Z targeting system kind of like keeps it modern enough that you can play it, and just the puzzles in those dungeons are some of the best dungeons in the series.
Yeah. It's such a like tightly packed world too.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's funny like playing it now, like it's much smaller than I remember because it just felt like such a big thing back when I was a kid.
Yeah.
But like even now, like it feels like so dense because like there's something everywhere, you know.
What's your favorite Ocarina of Time dungeon on the count of three? All right. Three.
Let me think.
Okay,
sorry.
Okay, are you ready? Did you think of it?
Yeah.
Three, two, one. The water
fire
temple.
Oh, really?
No,
is it really?
No, everyone hates that one.
I'll say though that the remastered version of that game, I think, is an incredible example, or like the remake for the DS, 3DS, is an incredible example of like how you can revisit a game and make it better. For example, the iron boots are an equipable item, or a usable item that you can like map to a button, as opposed to having to like pause the game, put them on, unpause the game, take them off, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. South Park Snow Day, Justin, a game that I normally would not be invested in. And yet, ever since our draft where you picked it and it was counterpicked, you picked it pretty early, if I'm remembering.
It was one of my second to last picks, I believe.
Oh, okay. So maybe not.
The score is going lower. That's fun.
Yes. So this, this is a like... It's like an RTS game. Like all the trailers make it look like RTS-y, but I have no idea. Do you know?
No, I absolutely, I thought from the makers of South Park, but then you all told me after I drafted it was a different studio.
It is not South Park Stick of Truth or whatever the other one is.
Yeah. So ends the South Park games.
Okay. This game did not score particularly well. Scored a 63 on the PS5, a 61 on the PC. It's unscored on the Xbox Series X and the Nintendo Switch. Reviews are pretty low for this guy. I mean some of them are relatively high. There's three nines on here, and then it sort of is weighted a little bit more towards the 4, 5, 6 sort of era. IGN gave it a 3 out of 10, which is, I mean, it's pretty low. But yeah, this is one that I've just been following just because of our fantasy draft. I asked the reviewer at DualShockers. I was like, hey, is this game good? And it's like, I think he gave it a 7. So there's that, maybe 7.5.
You get cards that give you like upgrades, it looks like, but it's literally like this like shitty looking 3D action game.
Yeah, it doesn't look great. I'm really sorry, South Park, whatever you're called, Snow Day. I was rooting for you, but
I clearly was too. But like if I saw what this game looked like, I would have not drafted it.
Yes. And I think that like if this were a follow up to Stick of Truth, or was it the Silent Butthole?
Silent,
am I making that up?
Silent Butthole, yeah.
Okay. Then I think this would be a good pick. You know what I mean? Because those games were received relatively well, but...
No. Fractured Butthole.
That makes more sense, huh?
That's actually pretty funny.
Yeah, there you go. Shout out South Park. Sometimes they got jokes over there. Last game in the Metacritic Roundup is Alone in the Dark. This is the remake, reboot of the... the creator of the survival horror genre, Alone in the Dark, which has had, this is the second reboot of the series. The first one was like, it was bad. It was on like Xbox 360. You had like, you're a guy in like a leather jacket. It was bad. It was quite bad. This one seems to not be received well either. A 64 on the PS5, a 65 on the Xbox Series X, and a 67 on the PC. All signs point to this being a kind of forgettable, kind of inoffensive, but also like uninteresting reboot that centers around like being in a mansion and like exploring and doing environmental puzzles and spooks and whatever else. It stars, what's his name, David Harbour, and who's the actress here? She was in, what was that movie with Ryan Reynolds in a video game? Free Guy. Her name is Jodie Comer.
Oh.
Or Comer, maybe? But so, yeah, so she's in this game as well. But thoughts on this game, Justin?
I think this begs the question, why did we need this video game?
I think that they've tried to make this series work. You know what I mean? Like they've tried to get sort of cement this game, this series as like a staple of survival horror because it like invented it, right? But like they just don't have the juice for it, it seems, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad they tried here, but like, I don't know. not interesting. Clearly it's not good. I'm glad the user rating seems better than the actual like critic. So people are finding some joy in this, but It doesn't like, I can just tell from the trailers that it doesn't even control very well.
It does not look like it controls very well. It looks like this game controls how I'm going to imagine the Silent Hill 2 remake controls.
Yeah. It looks like
the
looks
combat
like,
in the game looks like that.
It looks like a bad mini game from Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. Like, it just like.
Ooh, interested to hear more about that. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think this is a joyless experience, you know what I mean? But one that I'm certainly going to skip. Kind of like unremarkable, right? Like, if it was way worse, I'd be interested. If it was way better, I'd be interested, right? But like, kind of where it is right now, like, I'm okay. Justin, I finished Persona 3. Really?
What? Okay, you texted me that. We were joking about how, like, you're almost done and you're pretty sure you're ready to do it, but then apparently there was more?
There was more, like, it wasn't as bad as I thought. I was worried that, like, there was going to be, basically the game, like, segments you off into, like, these, like runs of going into Tartarus, and like it starts off like there's only like 5 floors per run, and then it gets to be like 50 or 60, you know what I mean? Just like as it goes, like it gets harder and more there's just like more to it. And I was worried that like when you go back to like finish the fight, basically, that it was going to be like, and there's an additional 60 floors. There is not. It was maybe like 10
but
15
enough.
Oh boy, was there enough. So I did finish it. Knockout fucking ending. Very, very good ending. I did, like, all in all, have a really good time with it. I'm glad it's done. Just because I'm ready to move on. But like, very good game. I have all the achievements except for the social stat one. Not starting a new game anytime soon though. Got all this stuff to do.
Checks out. That checks out. So overall recommendation for that game.
Like, do I recommend it? Oh, yeah. Do I recommend it over Persona 5? I do not.
Okay.
I do like it more than my time with Persona 4. But, like, it's funny. Like, when I played a little bit of Persona 3 Portable for the video I made on it, that game is pretty similar to Persona 4 in terms of, like, its combat and the way that it, like, sort of handles things. I think I liked this one more than Persona 4. Because the combat feels a little bit more modern, and then also because, like, the presentation's a little bit better, in my opinion, just because, like, I think the voice performances are all great. I was invested in a lot of the characters and stuff in a way that I wasn't necessarily in Persona 4. And also, this game does something that neither Persona 4 or 5 really did, or maybe they did, but it was just like, I didn't notice it, or it was like a little bit less overt. All of the characters, like, not even just like the main cast, but like all of the like confidants and everything like that, their stories all have like this kind of unifying theme of like loss, or like grief, or abuse, or like, it's heavy, but in a way that feels like really like everything sort of feels connected in terms of its like theme and it's like how it feels, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And that like ties into the narrative, like the main narrative, which is kind of cool. And I didn't really feel like there was that like cohesion in 4 or 5, which is interesting because like you'd think that like, oh, they must have been like, oh, that was a really great idea. We should do that again. But they did not. And so, yeah, so I really like it. I like it less than Persona 5, but it is still quite good. And I think I prefer some songs on the soundtrack to some of the Persona 5 songs.
Wow, that says a lot.
It's a good soundtrack.
All right.
Very good soundtrack.
All right. I will probably not be checking this out until I beat Persona 5, which...
it's not going to be. I'll say this, like... It seems like there's a lot of great stuff coming out later this year, but I would have to imagine that this would be in my top 10.
Oh wow!
I don't know if it's going to be like super high, depending on how I feel about other games that I play. But I am certainly, I did like it.
So you know what I mean? I don't feel it'd be wasted this year if I play Persona 5, right? If I play that game. And then we are doing our game of the year list and we're both talking about it. You talk about Persona 3. I'll just picture it being Persona 5 and whatever you think Persona 3 is, I'll just take back a rank. So theoretically, the best Persona 3 could do for our overall game of the year could be number 2. Does that seem like it's a fair thing?
I think that works.
Only if I play Persona 5.
I mean, that means you're going to have to play that game. Which... Hey, man.
And the 2024 Game of the Year for Hitbox, Persona 5.
pretty fucking good. Which, by the way, I completed Persona 3 in 77 hours. So it's just kind of a long experience.
Okay, that's a couple days.
Yeah. I remember the other day when I was like, all right, just... Not the other day, a few weeks ago when I was like past the 40-hour mark.
I'm almost there.
I was almost halfway. So there you go. Justin, you've been playing more Helldivers?
Yeah, I've been kind of going back in and out of it. I definitely see the loop. I see the appeal. I like it a lot. I definitely think that as you get to the harder levels, you need friends and some kind of coordination rather than just random nose breathers who forgot to turn their mics off. Granted, I have been that person several times that I've forgot to turn my mic off, but it is kind of fun, and I think it's the upgrade system is different. The how to get new stuff is about getting the badges a lot of the times for like your weapons and stuff rather than like actual in-game stuff, if I'm correct.
Can you say that again? Sorry.
Like when you complete like a mission, you get like a badge or something like that. I don't know what they're called, mark. That's how you get more weapons and stuff like that, rather than it being like, I just get to a certain level.
Yeah, it's like when you get like the medals, you use those to buy stuff in the battle pass.
Yeah.
And then that's where you get like guns. But then the other currency is how you get like the stratagems and stuff.
Yeah. So it's kind of interesting how they kind of go back and forth about that. And you're always getting stuff. Getting the stupid like green things in the missions is a pain in the butt, that currency.
Oh, the samples.
Yeah. Like you get like 4 or 5. And then like when you're playing like the harder difficulties, like you're not living, you're not.
No. So you have to like make sure you grab them.
But it gets like fun chaos and like even like jumping in with some random people online that just kind of pop in, because I play video games at weird times. Like I'm playing in spring break now. So I'm like been playing at like, you know, 11 o'clock in the morning when most normal humans are working.
I was going to say, I get notifications when you, like, I just have, like, the notifications on my phone of like, my PlayStation app, and it's like, Justin's online. I'm like, the fuck?
How? What's happening right now? So, like, jumping in with random people is still kind of fun, and I'm still always surprised when I'm playing, like, a medium match, and someone who's, like, level 34 pops in, and I'm like, why are you here? Like, what happened to you to make you sink down to my level? But I appreciate you being here. I think it's a lot of fun, and I do think like the actual like shooting of the game and the actual like moment to moment gameplay is very satisfying in some of the best ways possible, and they do make it feel like every like combat encounter you have, you've just survived by like your last bullet, no matter what the circumstances are.
Yes, 100%.
So I really kind of appreciate it. I'm digging it. I'll keep playing it here and there. I'm not like gonna probably like marathon it for like 5 hours straight, but couple sessions a day, I'm okay with that. We gotta at some point arrange a sesh with the group.
Yes. Yes. Get the full four.
Yeah. Yeah.
Going. Yeah. Because it is good when you have like, yeah, the full squad of it all going.
Mostly I've been playing a lot of Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, and that game is like super goofy in the best way possible. If I'm going to give it a weird critique, that is not really a critique. I guess it is a critique. It's like paced oddly in terms of how they give you like open world versus linear moments. Like at the very beginning of the game, you have a pretty linear section, and then you get to this open world, you have a dungeon, you get another open world, and then it's like a couple hours of just like linear experiences through towns and like little mini games and stuff like that. And I'm not like disliking any of it, but like it is like the most open yet linear moment of like game that I can think of. That the mini games are like mandatory that you have to kind of like play and get through.
I've heard they're fun though.
Yeah.
I've heard that like the quality of them is quite high.
So like a good example is there's a cruise ship that you go on at a certain point of the game, and literally it's like a boss battle in the cruise ship and a queen's blood tournament. That's it. Like it's a major like 80% of what you do in that chapter is a Queen's Blood tournament, and
it's
like
cool.
It's like it's just odd that that's like a choice that they made that you kind of have to play through, and not that I didn't enjoy it, and they make it that you don't have to like win it or be good at it to like progress, but like it's just such a weirdly paced game that you're never quite bored, but I never feel like I get to do the thing that I want to do, which is fight people.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just kind of strange that so little of that game is the actual combat of it. But boy, like there's just some parts of it that are just so freaking wacky that it is just so much fun. Specifically that card tournament. Basically it's like a 5-round tournament where you have to like first, you know, like it's you play a couple rounds, you play against your friends, you play against characters, you know, and you get to this final, like boss battle that's actually pretty tough. And then this like goofy thing happens with Red 13 that like I don't want to spoil, but like it is like literally one of just the goofiest fucking things that they like throw in this game that at times can be exceptionally serious, but then they just have this like weird stuff happening the whole time. And like there's literally like this like it's just the weird it, like it it I love the tone of this game so much. It's a lot of fun. I do think, and I keep going back to, I'm thinking about like you being the audience for this. Unless you've played and beaten Final Fantasy VII Remake, it's hard to recommend this game.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
And that's just because a lot of like the characters and stuff that you meet throughout the whole thing, they do such like subtle little callbacks the whole time that if you don't know who these people are, I just think you're missing out on so much of like the world building that they've done in the previous game that it just almost seems random. And I think you could go about the game just assuming random stuff is happening and these random characters are popping up with no context. But like having just a little bit of that context of the story, I think just helps so much because there are still moments where it's like, what just happened here? and like the more moments you have of that, the less connected you feel with the story. So at least having this cool world that they build with characters that are connecting from game to game, I think is kind of a big deal in the story. So I would recommend you playing through the end of it, though. At this point, like how do you get, you know what I mean?
I would need to play the whole thing.
Yeah. But I mean, you could still watch a recap of it. And if there's a character in there that you're like, who the fuck are you? You can like look back and like find out. But
okay, then maybe that's the way to go of watch a recap and be able to pick it up from there. Yeah. Cause like, I just like, to be entirely honest with you, it's not that I'm not interested in it. Cause I did like the original one, like the remake rather. I just don't think, I simply don't have the time to do it.
Yeah.
You know,
it is still like, in terms of its combat though, it is one of the most fun combat systems in an RPG action-y game because it like satisfies both of those itches in such a great way. And I feel like the boss battles that they have in this are like really like interestingly done. Makes you use all of your different materia, it makes you use all your different items, it makes you really kind of think about the strategy about it while you're constantly moving around and running around, thinking about spacing, thinking about what characters you're using, thinking about who's in your party. Like it is just like a good little puzzle that you kind of have to put together. All I deciding what swimsuit and bikinis to put on your characters.
Dude, it's important though.
Yeah.
But, like, it tells you a lot.
Yeah.
I should make a video about that.
There's not that many options in this game, but, like...
Okay. Sure. Okay.
There's like, the casual and then the slutty one.
Oh.
And that's... I'm including Cloud in that one, too. Oh. You know what I mean?
No. Everyone in that game. Down bad slut.
Except for Barrett, who is the Stay Puft fucking Marshmallow Man.
I was going to say, though, too, like... He's not, though, because he didn't have a wife. Am I misremembering that? He's got a daughter for sure. Yeah,
There's this whole, like, sad subplot that's going to happen with him later on in the game. But, like, literally, there's this part where he's, like, sneaking around. He's bitching about this, like, sailor costume that he puts on. And then later on, he has a choice to put on any costume that he wants. And he puts on this sailor outfit again because he's kind of gotten attached to it and kind of likes it. And he's just this big Stay Puft Marshmallow, like, walking around. It's great. Great stuff.
I love that.
I love Barrett.
Yeah. He's a down bad slut. Is that okay for me to say?
You said it.
And I stand by it. I'm like down bad slut, parentheses, complimentary. Yeah.
You know what it's I a mean? Thumbs like, up. Like, it's good. It's yeah, always,
don't
yeah.
get me. Don't get me wrong. This is Barrett. Keep doing your thing.
Yeah, keep being you, man.
Justin, I also like I don't want to like spend a whole lot of time on this because we have news to talk about, believe it or not. I'm playing a lot of Blotro and it's very fucking good. I can't stop. I simply can't stop. It's really good.
I saw someone like do a clip from a Casino Royale where they took the bad guy and they put like a Joker thing on him and they set it up to look like a Blotro game.
That's so funny. That's actually really, really funny. Yeah, it's good. Justin, we got to talk about the news. Let's go.
Let's do it.
All right, I think the big one here is about Larian Studios saying that they are moving on from Baldur's Gate. That they are, you know, they're still updating the game. There's still like things to come for it, but they're not doing any significant DLC and they are not going to do Baldur's Gate 4. This was revealed at GDC this past weekend where Sven Vinke, he's the guy who wore the armor at the Game Awards. He is the Larian Studios founder. He basically said that they are going to move away from D&D and Wizards of the Coast, and they're going to do something else. Basically saying, like, those characters, that world is all in Wizards of the Coast's hands, which I don't know much about Wizards of the Coast, but when I saw this, I saw that a lot of people were not happy about that. So to my understanding, they maybe might not handle things particularly well. But a lot of people had questions about like why. And he talked about corporate greed and like and how that connects to layoffs and stuff like that. And how being connected to large companies like this just isn't really a good idea if you are trying to avoid that sort of stuff and cultivate a healthy studio environment. On Twitter, the director of publishing at Larian Studios, at Cromwelp, very AFK, no idea what this guy's real name is, but he works at Larian. He quote tweeted an article and said, "If you look at what's happening in our industry, be it the creation of games or games media itself, I think it's about time we all accept it's okay to say, actually, I don't think you know what you're doing. I don't think you have a plan for us. Start planning." And so I think it seems like pretty clearly aimed at Wizards of the Coast saying like, you guys don't know what you're doing and you don't have like any idea of where we fit into that. So we're out, you know, which like, hey, fucking more power to them. And I hope that they get to work on something that is fulfilling for them. I think they should. After playing Baldur's Gate 3, I'm going to play whatever the fuck Larian Studios puts out next. Like guarantee.
Have you played Divinity Original Sin 2?
I have not, but I've heard it's good.
Is it similar to Baldur's Gate in terms of its gameplay? Like, you know, I don't know.
I think so.
A little bit. There's two ways of looking at this for me. Obviously, like, I think that's a smart call for them not to be, like, stuck with Baldur's Gate.
Yes.
And, like, I don't think why I like Baldur's Gate is because it's called Baldur's Gate. And I think
it's because it's D&D, not at all.
And I think many people that like fell in love with Baldur's Gate didn't really care about Baldur's Gate 1 or 2. They don't care about the characters that, oh, this character is actually the main character in Baldur's Gate 2. Did you know that? People don't care about that. They just liked the branching story, the choice that you had, the characters, that kind of thing. That's what they liked about the game. I would be sad if they don't make another game like this.
I heard someone saying, like, give them the Mass Effect IP, and, like, that would be fucking crazy good. However, I want to see what they can do.
Right.
I want, like be unshackled. And also, they would never, because if their whole thing is like, hey, fuck these corporations who don't know what they're doing, they're not going to go to EA. But, yeah.
But,
you were saying.
Come but, on. Like, I want them to do a, I would like them to do another D&D game, another campaign, so to speak. And to see what everything they've learned from Baldur's Gate and what they've learned from the fans, like perspective of Baldur's Gate, like what they could create in this kind of like style of game. I am interested in that. I would be upset and sad. That's wrong. Upset's the wrong word. I would be sad if they go and do like a third person action game next.
Oh, 100%. Like this style is so good. Like, and it is so like well done. And I mean, like the way that they've done like branching narratives and branching paths is just so cool. You know what I mean? Like, agreed, 100%. Like, I hope that they stick with the style of Baldur's Gate 3 and just apply it to whatever else they want to do.
In this article from VGC, they have an ad for South Park Snow Day, and this game looks like a 6 out of 10 if I've ever seen one.
Is that right?
Yeah, if that. It's just, wow.
It's unfortunate.
Wow.
Yeah.
We'll download, we'll play.
Report back.
I will report back.
I don't know. At the end of the day, I'm happy to hear that Larian has the ability to walk away. Right, because I know other studios might not have that financial ability to say, like, actually, fuck this, you know. But the fact that they're able to say, like, we're good, you know, thanks for giving us the license, we're going to do our own thing. And I think that they have, I mean, this is just my guess, I can't say this for sure or not, I guess we'll have to see. But, like, in my opinion, I think that they have built up that goodwill and that, trust from people who didn't even care about them before. I didn't even think about them before Baldur's Gate 3. Played it, loved it. I'm on board. Give me whatever they're working on next. I will play.
I knew Divinity was a good game, but like I didn't have like I wasn't compelled to play it. And I've been told to play it by several people before, but I'm just like, I don't know. And then like playing Baldur's Gate, I was like, oh, I really do like this gameplay style more than I thought I would. But I think it kind of the ultimate end of this is that Larian doesn't need Baldur's Gate. Baldur's Gate needed Larian.
Needs Larian, yes.
Yeah, yeah, so that's the, you know, that's a sign of a healthy relationship for Larian to be like, you know what? I don't need this. I don't need you. Right. I'm leaving you. Yeah. And Baldur's Gate's like, no! Them.
I know. It sucks. It sucks, though, because, like, I would love to see what else they do. But, like, it's just, like, what you said, right? Like, it's not because of D&D, it's not because of Baldur's Gate specifically, it's just because like they did a really good job.
Yeah,
you know, so like, yeah, whatever. Justin, GTA 6 according to Kotaku, who's kind of on fire right now, in a good way, and in they're having some issues, we'll talk about it in a little bit, but Kotaku reported that someone close to the situation of the development of GTA 6 said someone with knowledge of the game's development process says that GTA 6 could miss its 2025 release window and slip into 2026. The article basically says that when the game was like officially showcased and revealed and whatever, that they were looking at an early 2025 release date, but that it could slip into late to 2026. And that the return to office sort of issue notice that Rockstar had issued to its staff is to help speed things up a little bit. What do you think about this?
Ooh, I don't like that second part.
I don't either. I think that sucks. And I think like this whole like push for return to office is like foolish. People get their jobs done at home. They do. Like it, some people prefer to work in an office and having that option there for them is great. But like people also like to work at home. And especially now, like it's just so common, you know, to let people work at home.
Yeah. I mean, like, is there proof that they're less productive when they're at home, or is it the fact that when they're at work, they can like, you know, put more overtime and hours on them? You know what I mean? Like,
right. That's the other thing. It's like, Rockstar is not necessarily known for being kind to its staff. You know what I mean? Like, and that sucks. But like, yeah, if someone works at home, hey, it's 5 o'clock. Peace. You know what I mean? Like there's not that culture of like, well, you know, everyone else is still here.
Now, this is getting to the interesting time. Like, if we're hitting 2026, this is hitting to maybe we're in our next generation of consoles already. Maybe
2026.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, or at least getting there.
Getting
for sure.
There to that point where maybe it'll be at the end. Like, who knows when it's coming out? Because they came out in 2020, right? End of 2020.
The PS5.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like, Phil Spencer said that they anticipate 2028 to be their next one.
Maybe.
But that's Xbox.
So yeah. I mean, maybe. Like, it just seems to me like, already, you know, like a game like this is going to be a massive game in general for yes. everything. And I don't know. I think take the time that they need for this game. Grand Theft Auto is always going to be a industry defining game. I have faith that Rockstar is going to create something that is going to be unique, special, maybe not everyone's cup of tea, but it's going to be something that let them cook.
And I've seen like a lot of people like really upset about this, but like, guys, it's been 10 years.
Yeah. Why don't you like, buy some more shark cards and get over it?
Like, what is a shark card?
With shark buck? What's the money they call the money?
Is that from GTA?
Yeah. No, yeah. Yeah. GTA Online shark cards. Yeah. Yeah.
Like I know, like, I guess I know that it hates, like that it hurts. Sorry. To like have to know that you have to wait even longer, but like, guys, it's been 10 years. By the time this is supposed to come out, it will have been 12 years.
You know what Rockstar should
waiting
do?
Another one, it's gonna be fine.
They should hire like, I don't know, like 5,000 more people, overwork everyone,
no,
and then they should fire about 7,000 people once the game actually comes out. Then they can get it out on 2025.
Like, execs are like, oh, that's good.
Are
we ready
to
sound?
All of a sudden, our numbers go up on Hitbox. It's all like corporate people, and they're like, yeah, these people get us.
Yeah, yeah. It's just, they're like, yeah, I love this. I work for Embracer.
to be clear, everyone, that is exactly what should not happen. I'm just saying that out of parody.
I think
parody.
You endorse it. I think you
no,
think that's
no,
a good
I didn't.
Idea.
I swear I didn't. No.
You love that. You love it. Justin, so Xbox, do you know them? They're like, they make video games and consoles.
Do they make good video games? I'm still waiting to see those.
Made good video games. Let me tell
like
you
in
about
2006
a game
in 2000.
Oh, I'm sorry. Let me tell you about a game called Halo Combat Evolved from 2001. Let me tell you about a little video game called Halo 2 from 2003.
Oh no.
4 maybe. Let me tell you about a video game called Halo 3. All right. And Halo ODST and Halo Reach. Right?
Are we in the 20 teens yet?
Wipe that smile off your face, okay? That was 2011.
All Halo right, all right. We just got
so
there.
Off that high fucking horse.
Is 11 a teen?
That's a tween, isn't it? The 20 tweens, you know? When's the last... Okay, now this is actually something. When's like the last like Xbox...
Microsoft Flight Simulator.
Game Studios game that I like have like loved.
Oh.
List of Xbox Game Studios games. Okay. Scrolling all the way down to the most recent stuff. Okay. Well, it wasn't Grounded. It wasn't Pentiment. Sorry, I don't want to just like read this whole list out to you. Like I liked Halo Infinite. Oh, Psychonauts 2 was good.
Yeah, yeah. People like, but I could play that in many places.
Yeah, no, but that's still in that. Like, but that's kind of their game, right?
About yeah. You're missing Forza. I mean, all those games would be the ones that
Yeah. Oh, shit. I meant to mention this. Tell Me Why
is a video game. Ain't nothing but a heart.
Exactly. Right. It's the Don't Nod game by Life is Strange people. I played the first chapter of it this past weekend for work.
Oh.
I'm writing about some stuff that, and I was going to talk about it, but I was like, I should play this game. It's cute. I liked it more. I haven't finished it. I don't know if I'm going to finish it just because of my time. But I liked it more than I've liked any of the other Life is Strange stuff.
So. Oh, okay. I think Claire played that.
Yeah, it's good. It's, yeah, it's good. So Xbox. According to Christopher Dring, he is the, he's associated with GamesIndustry.biz, the head of it, the lead of GamesIndustry.biz, said on the Games Industry Microcast podcast that he had talked to some people at GDC. And let me just read you some quotes here from this podcast. Xbox is in real trouble as a hardware manufacturer. The other thing I heard it from a very prominent company and one not so prominent, was Xbox's performance in Europe is just flatlining. You can follow our monthly coverage in the games market, and you can see that Xbox sales are falling, and it's been falling all throughout last year, and it's falling even harder this year. The phrase one major company who released a big game last year said was, "I don't know why we bothered supporting it." We mentioned on a previous podcast that we'd heard retailers in Europe are considering or have already been cutting back their Xbox stock on their shelves, hardware, games, that kind of thing. And now you've got third-party publishers going, we're going to be putting a lot of effort to try to create a Series S version and X version of this game when, to be honest with you, for us, the market is PC and PS5. He goes on to say, and with Xbox putting in some of the games on PS5, from what I've heard, putting some of their games on PS5, from what I understand, the majority of them will be coming across at some point, assuming it progresses as Xbox believes it will. I think Xbox is in real trouble as hardware manufacturer, and that was the thing that came out of GDC for me. What do you think?
I think this is something that Microsoft has been, I don't want to say planning for, but like they've been creating a world where they don't need to be.
There's no way that they're like, we didn't see this coming.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's happened? Like they know that's why they're bringing things to PS5, right? Like, and cause you look at like, I don't know if we covered this. I think we talked about this, mentioned this last week at the very least, like Sea of Thieves, like what was it? Like the most pre-orders out of anything for the last, however long, right? Broke a record or whatever. People want to play their games. You know, on PS5. So go on.
And it baffles me to a certain degree, because like a game that you can get free on Xbox, I don't care how much of a fanboy I am for like, you know, Nintendo and Sony. If I have two options to play the game on Microsoft Game Pass for free versus playing it on like PlayStation, Why would I play it on PlayStation?
Yeah.
Now, granted, I am in a place where I am privileged and fortunate enough that I can afford both of the consoles and I can afford a Game Pass subscription, which is not everyone's reality. And I do kind of understand, if I were to choose one console at this point, well, I can play most of the good things on Xbox on my PlayStation if I have the PlayStation, but I can't play a lot of the good stuff on Sony on a PlayStation on my Xbox. I think that makes sense, but I think they just have to prove that their first party games are worth it.
Yes.
In a way that when you buy them, you are only you only can play them on your Xbox, but they are also seeing that world, like you said, where they put them on another system and a bunch of people are buying them there. So like, why do they have to be the one to sell the box?
I wouldn't be surprised if like the Xbox Series X is like the final one for them.
It would be.
I don't think that's gonna happen necessarily, because I know that they've talked about, you know, they're working on new hardware. That they said that at their little like 15-minute podcast or whatever the fuck, when they announced that games will be coming to PS5. But like, I wouldn't be surprised if they're out of it soon.
Yeah, but also European sales are not like the end all be all of markets.
No.
You know what I mean? Like that might be the case as people, you know, sitting there what are Europeans like? They like their football and their
they do like their football,
their rugby. What are their tea and crumpets game simulators?
Let me just tell you this: tea and crumpets. Fuck, I had a really good time eating those tea and crumpets.
What's a crumpet? I don't know. Is it like a croissant?
It's like an English muffin. But if it was more like breadier and like spongier. Mm.
Did you go to a restaurant and say, can I have a crumpet?
I did not. My man Sam made one for me.
Ooh.
Sat there, watched him. I think you should leave.
Ooh.
Tea and crumpets in the morning. Ooh. Very good.
Do you think that was a sign for you to leave?
That actually makes a lot of sense.
Mixed message there.
He had me all packed up. Yeah he had
but
me all
also
packed
cooking
up.
You a delicious yeah. meal. Watching one of your favorite shows, guy. But like, yeah. It's also, you know, get out of here.
Yeah. Crumpets, very good.
I think Microsoft has always been looking at the fact that their consoles don't sell well as other consoles in certain territories, specifically Japan, specifically, I guess, now in Europe. And they know that their kind of big thing is subscription services and getting people to play games. So I think eventually they might transition out of making hardware, but I don't know, maybe not.
Makes sense though. Like to me, like it makes sense why they would maybe like retailers would be cutting down on like retail space for not necessarily Xbox consoles. I mean, like that would make sense if they're not selling that well, but like, and they're big, you know what I mean? Like to sell a console, like it's a big box. But like on discs, because I mean, they certainly are headed in the discless way. Right. And even like, I can't tell you the last Xbox disc I bought. It might've been Resident Evil Village. What was Elden Ring or Resident Evil Village? Which one came out more recently? I think Elden Ring. Ring I have a disc for.
Okay, all right.
And that would be
Xbox game you've bought.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I mean, like, I guess like it, like I also like buy less games now because I get codes and stuff like that, but like still.
So you're like, saying your library is more digital?
Yeah, I fucking hate it. But I'm seeing the writing on the walls though, right? About like, hey, shit, you know, we are moving in that direction, and I'm gonna assume that the next PS6, that the next Xbox, do not have disc drives. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just gonna assume that that's the case, which is a shame. But I've been thinking about like, hey, fuck, my physical library of games and stuff like that is going to, I think, sooner rather than later, be more of a hassle than anything else. You know what I mean?
It's crazy.
Yeah. So that's what's going on with them there. However, there've been some rumors about an Xbox handheld game. Chris, what's his name? I'm forgetting his name. Chris Plant, from Polygon. I think he's one of the founders. Asked Phil Spencer about it in an interview, basically like just saying like, hey, there've been some rumors about these sorts of things. Like what do you think about that? And he said that this is from an IGN article talking about it from Wesley Yin Poole, titled "As Official Xbox Handheld Rumors Swirl, Phil Spencer Reveals What He Wants From It," saying that Spencer discussed various existing PC gaming handhelds, listing everything that he would add to the experience of using them to make them, quote, feel like an Xbox. This includes having access to all of your games with associated save files, being able to boot into the Xbox app full screen but in a compact mode, and having all the social experiences normally found on Xbox. Like, I want it to feel like the dash of my Xbox when I turn on the television, Spencer said, except I want it on those devices. He didn't like confirm or deny whether or not they're working on that there is like anything like happening with one officially. But I think it seems probably pretty likely that they are at the very least working on one. It would make sense given the fact that like Sony is working on one. Nintendo is, you know, the Switch is their huge handheld thing. Their Steam Deck. There's the Asus or ROG Ally. Sorry. There's a bunch of other stuff like that. Like it makes sense that they might want to get into it. I think that they might be spreading themselves a little thin. I mean, I'm sure people would buy these, but like, I think Xbox has something that no one else has. And that is their sort of like X Cloud stuff. And so I wonder if like an Xbox handheld is like making use of that, or if it's just they're just trying to have a have it like internally have the power. You know what I mean? But what do you think?
I honestly think handheld is kind of like the future. I don't want to say the future, but I think like Switch has proven that handhelds are what people want. The hybrid thing is the interesting thing of that, because I wonder if it wasn't a hybrid, how successful it would be. The Portal sales, I was trying to look those up, but it looks...
Oh, they're good, right?
They're people really like good. And a bunch of things that... let me see. This is according to Yahoo Tech. They talk about how Sierranet's Matt Piscatella, accessory spending grew by 25% in the U.S. during the month of February, helped by a 14% increase in spending on game pads and remote play devices, which includes the PlayStation Portal. The PlayStation Portal Edge Pass, no pun intended, the DualSense Edge in the month of February. However, the DualSense Edge remains the best-selling accessory of 2024 to date in the U.S. I think that shows you that something like the Portal, as basic and simple and how use case scenario that thing is, I mean, it changed how I play games. It's so much easier for me to throw on my, I was playing freaking Helldivers on my Portal the other night, which is not, I would say.
Did that work?
Yeah, it worked. It was fine.
Yeah.
Would I suggest playing everything like that? No, but like when I was like going ready for bed, I was like, I could like sit here and get pissed off at, Bellatro as I lose on, you know, like go to a run and like, you know, not win. Or I could just, you know, keep going with this vibe of Helldivers I've been starting with and played a couple of matches of that, get some upgrade points or whatever. Like, I mean, if I could do that with Game Pass, the likelihood of me playing more Game Pass games would go up exponentially. The getting my use out of Game Pass, because right now, like, I kind of flirt around with it sometimes on my, what do they call that thing? The Backbone. But I don't, I haven't really used that since... I haven't really used that since I got my Portal, just because, you know, I like my PlayStation games a little bit better sometimes. A game like Final Fantasy VII Rebirth is kind of good for the Portal, because like it doesn't have to be like exactly like accurate when you're playing it. Like you're hitting buttons, you're doing actions, sure, but you can still like pause it, slow down time, do whatever. It works out pretty well. I did struggle occasionally. There were some times when I was doing some shooting things in Resident Evil 4 remake that I was playing, but still for the most part, I was able to get through that game quite successfully playing it on my Portal. And yes, is it the perfect gaming experience? No, but like, it's so convenient. I love it. It's great. So,
and that's the thing. Like, I think you're not alone in feeling that though, of just being like, of people saying like, is this perfect? No, but this is like pretty good for what I want it to be, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's great.
And I think Microsoft, why not try it out? See what happens.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but I wonder if it's going to be a cloud streaming thing, or if they're trying to get something that has the power of an Xbox in a handheld, you know what I mean? So they can run natively or whatever.
Or you get like an upgrade that you put on the actual thing that you like magnetize on the back, that if you want to actually process it on here, you put this on. Otherwise, you just stream it.
Be kind of cool. I know we're joking around. Well,
streaming does seem to be kind of the future, I think, eventually.
Yeah, we just had to figure out like how to make it work consistently well. Well, you know,
internet doesn't work well. What are you talking about?
So I'm going to explain this joke that Justin's making real quick. I'm pretty quick with the edits here. I cut out the 9 different times that we had to sort of stop and just go, can you hear me? Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Anyway, speaking of Xbox though, we were joking about like Xbox games. Elder Scrolls 6 is apparently playable in some level, in some regard. Bethesda Game Studios. Today is the 30th year anniversary of the Elder Scrolls as a series with Bethesda, which is pretty significant, right? That's a lot. They made a post basically just like saying like, you know, thanks for all the, you know, for supporting us and like we love making this world and whatever, and saying that they are currently working on and having fun with the builds of Elder Scrolls 6 that they have currently. Yeah, I've seen a lot of people sort of like running with this as an idea, and like, yeah, yes, having it be playable is important and something. But also like, games are like playable for a long time. You know what I mean? Like when you say playable, are you talking about like you are a shape going against other shapes? You know what I mean? Like, you know what I'm saying? So it's unclear. So like what point, like how playable it is. I still wouldn't expect this for a while. I mean, Starfield just came out, right? People have pointed out though that, you know, this series is 30 years old, and if Phil Spencer, when he was on the stand last year or 2 years ago, said that we should anticipate Elder Scrolls 6 coming in 2028 or later, which if that's the case means that people have been waiting 17 years for Elder Scrolls 6.
Well,
which is more than half of the length of the series.
I can't believe they did this. I thought they were going to stop doing this. Did Bethesda literally just release the release date of Elder Scrolls 6?
How? Sorry?
2030.
2030, LOL. I'm like, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, like at that point, like we are looking at something that is like either a launch like game or like in the years following the launch of the next Xbox. Why it's so far away still? That's crazy.
I know. And but like, to be honest, like I think for a game like this, yeah, I'm sure it's playable, but like you need to work on the polish. You need to work on the consistency, the coherence, how the story and the quests all go together and this kind of thing. I think part of the thing with Starfield that really killed it was like at parts it just felt lifeless or not connected, or like you had all of these cool ideas that weren't actually realized the way that they could have been. And that dream of exploring a universe and like literally going wherever and doing whatever you wanted just wasn't realized, because that is something that takes a lot of time. But they're a company that is so good on detail. Maybe not Rockstar levels, but like still pretty.
They make interesting worlds.
Yeah. Build out this world. I want this game to be the best thing possible. I don't root for this thing to be bad, and I definitely don't root for this thing to be out tomorrow so I can have a bad game and ruin Elder Scrolls for me. I want this game to be everything it needs to be. Pray that my health is good and I'm not blind by the time this game comes out. I will play it when it's ready, even if it would be 2030.
I mean, I'll say this. I think that the reason Starfield didn't work for me was because of how disjointed it felt.
I agree.
Do you know what I mean? And like, if it was just more seamless, if it wasn't just like so many loading screens, I think I would have like stuck with it and really liked it. It's like the idea of an Elder Scrolls, like another Elder Scrolls game. Like, even though I didn't like Starfield, I'm not like turned off by like Bethesda games entirely. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm interested in this.
I mean,
but yeah, I think everything you said makes sense.
An Elder Scrolls game in a Tears of the Kingdom size world.
Come on now.
I mean, isn't that what we want? Like something that is that expertly designed where everywhere you turn, there's something. And you never have to like, you see that, you walk there, you go there. I mean, that's what we talked about was great about Skyrim, is that you kind of could do that.
There's a, do you know Nakey Jakey?
These names, they swear to God.
he's on YouTube. He makes good videos.
Can I type this into the computer without losing like my...
You couldn't do it at the school. Okay. Like you would hit the safe search for sure. But so he has a really good one on Starfield talking about like what makes Skyrim so special. And like, it's so good because of what you're saying, right? Like there's so many details everywhere. And like, you're going to go to the quest marker, but you're like walking around and you're like, hold on a second. I might as well check out this cave. And then you spend, you know, 25 to 30 to 45 minutes in the cave doing something really cool and fun. And then you come out and you're like, oh my gosh, I totally forgot I was going to that objective marker. And then you keep walking that way and you're like, it's a fucking dragon. All right, let me fight that. You know, like there's so many things everywhere. Whereas, and then it's like in Starfield, like you land on a planet, you talk to the one person you got to talk to, and then they say, hey, go talk to this person in a cave. You know, it's a 6 minute, like literally a 6 minute walk away. And then you walk for 6 full minutes in a straight line. Nothing happened. Like there's nothing there. You talk to that person and then you leave. I think that's a problem with Starfield. I don't think that would be a problem with, you know, Elder Scrolls because of the way that that is like the world would be designed and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I saw someone joke that, hey, it's fully playable. That's crazy. That's the first Bethesda game studio game to be like that.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's rough. But yeah, playable, but in what way, you know? Just in some big games media shakeup stuff happened this past week. So Jen Gleason, or Glennon, rather, who was the editor-in-chief at Kotaku, resigned this past week, basically tweeting, let's see here. Let's see. Incredible tweet. Let me just tell you this. Some personal news. I resigned from Kotaku, and Jim Spanfeller is an herb. Jim Spanfeller, I believe, is the owner of Go Media. So let me read you a little bit of this article from Aftermath, titled "Kotaku Editor in Chief Resigns Over New Editorial Edict." Jen Glennon, who took over as editor-in-chief of Kotaku in October, resigned Thursday. In a resignation letter seen by Aftermath, Glennon says that she made this choice due to the management team's recent decision to deprioritize news in favor of guides. Glennon is the second editor-in-chief of Kotaku since Stephen Totilo's departure in 2021, following Patricia Hernandez, who was fired in August 2023. After careful consideration, I've concluded that the current management structure and decision-making process at Go Media are not aligned with my values and goals for Kotaku, Glenn wrote in her letter of resignation, which was addressed to Go Media executives Jim Spanfeller and Leah Goldman. I firmly believe that the decision to invert Kotaku's editorial strategy to deprioritize news in favor of guides is fundamentally misguided given the current infrastructure of the site. This decision directly is directly contradicted by months of traffic data and shows an astonishing disregard for the livelihoods of the remaining writers and editors who work here. So according to someone who was on Kotaku's staff, who talked with Aftermath, they said that the staff is expected to create 50 guides a week on the site, and which is just not where their traffic ever has been. It's just not where they reside. So what do you think about this?
Either way, there feels like, at least from Jen Glennon's perspective here, from what she's saying, it seems to be like they're targeting editors for some reason or another, whether it is the fact that their money, they're not listening to what the company wants, that kind of thing. Like, it seems like they're being targeted, in my opinion, from her side of the story.
Yeah. Go Media has a pretty great finger on the pulse of not really understanding why people like its websites. Specifically, like, I know more about Kotaku than its other websites, but like Jezebel, I know, has had issues with this. I don't even know if they even own Jezebel anymore. Or like The Onion, for example, has had issues with this. AV Club, all this sort of things. Like, they don't understand why people like Kotaku specifically. People like Kotaku for the news and for the like reporting that they do, right? And like the opinions that the writers have. They, you know, it's not a guides like powerhouse. They do guides, sure, all websites do guides, but like, they do not have the staff to be able to like be a guides website, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And to mandate, you know, I don't remember how many people are actually like staff writers for Kotaku. It's not a lot. It was a surprising number, but for them to hit 50, and it was 50, by the way, as the entire staff, not just like per person, which does make the story like a little bit. I saw a lot of people being like 50 guides per week per person. That's preposterous. Yes, that's fucking crazy. That was not the expectation. But basically saying like it would result in these sorts of like SEO, like Google SEO, like trash articles that like don't actually get any traction. Like every single game there is Google SEO for game name, how to save. There always is, but it's not like people aren't clicking on that. It's also like not a good article unless it's like an actual thing that you need to know. You know what I mean? So if you did like Resident Evil 4 remake, hard, like extra hard mode, how to save, that's an article because like that is an actual mechanic that people have to engage with, right? Like there's like stuff to talk about there. But for most games, it's just not something. You know what I'm trying to say here?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The interesting thing is like I would like to see the data specifically because she said that the traffic was more on their articles rather than on their guides too, which is interesting to me because that does not align with the idea that they are trying to make money as a company. You know what I mean? Like the traffic is what brings in clicks, which is what brings in money.
I saw some people talking about this on Twitter and like, I'm curious about this, where basically the standards that it seems are being set are sort of in direct like opposition for each other, right? So like they want, let's do guides, but they also want like higher traffic, right? But like they know because they have the data that the guides are not the thing that are giving them higher traffic. So you're sort of creating this impossible standard, right? And so like Go Media has not treated Kotaku particularly well over the past several years. You might be able to come to a conclusion saying like, hey, maybe they're trying to set this impossibly high standard so that no one meets it and that they have a reason to let people go. You know what I mean? I can't say whether or not that's true or what, but like, I think that that is, certainly something that corporations do, you know?
I just clicked on a random writer from Kotaku here. This is the Zach Zweizen.
He's like one of their lead people. Yeah.
Okay, so on March 25th, which is the day we're recording, posted 3 articles. On March 22nd, 2 articles. On March 21st, 2 articles. On March 20th, 4 articles. On March 19th, 4 articles. So I wonder if in their stupid brain here, when they're looking at a article versus looking at a guide, right? If they're expecting their people to come up with 50 guides a week, like that's a high number, isn't it?
It's a lot.
Right? I mean, 4 to 5 articles a day is a high number too.
Yeah, like to me, 5 is the absolute max you should be doing, but like that is like press release stuff.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like that's like the news is already out there. You're not doing any additional reporting. It's just like, hey, they've told us that this is happening.
Right, here right. So at least they're probably like, well, if we can get one person to do 50 versus one person to do 20 a week, it's much easier to justify the one person doing 50 a week, even if those 50 things get less things, which completely like takes the heart out of why people want to come to Kotaku.
Yes. Like Zach Zweizen.
Right.
You don't fucking read because he makes guides.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like a guide by him is the same as a guide by Moises, someone who else works at Kotaku, or Kenneth Shepard. Like they're going to be the same. Not to say that they're not talented individually. Right. Obviously what I'm saying is like their voices are important doing the reporting that they do.
Right. And like even these articles, these were like, not just like, you know, a news brief. These are like articles that he's writing.
Yeah.
Like
reporting and like act, like he does good work, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's wild too, because like this is like right off the heels of the like Sweet Baby Inc. stuff that we were talking about last week or the week before. And all of that has been kicked off by this article on Kotaku, right? By Alyssa Merkin. I don't know how to remember her last name off the top of my head. But yeah, you know what I mean? Like, and I read somewhere, I don't remember where. But she, that article is their number 2 traffic driver for what, 3 weeks, 4 weeks since it came out. So, hey, that is like a perfect example of like, hey, you should be doing the reporting here, you know?
Yeah. I mean, and like anyone who does news like you've done or journalism to begin with, journalism is a hard thing. You got to constantly be hustling to do this. Right. And like to constantly have your work not be appreciated. And you've literally had this happen to you where your good reporting is rather, well, can you just do this? Like this thing from this like garbage report. Can you do that instead? That's better for us. How about you do that?
So something that I've never been like someone's boss before, really. You know what I mean? And now I am. I lead this video section. And sort of as we've been building up this team, I've had to think really hard about like about how to handle this sort of stuff, right? Because like there are mandates we need to hit in terms of content that we need to create, right? Like there are numbers that we have to hit. But like, I have made it very clear to the upper management that I will never like that the things that they want us to do take time. And if they want it to be good, then they have to give us that time. You know what I mean? And so that's sort of something that I've worked really hard at with like having those conversations about like how to handle managing this team is like, how do you say like, take all the time you need, but also we do need you to make this, you know what I mean? And I think I've done a good job where it's like, hey, our current strategy right now is we alternate weeks. There's 1 week it's a Christian video, the next week it's a Peter video, the next week it's a Christian video, the next week it's a Peter video. That means we basically have like, what?
I took that you meant religion for a beginning for a moment. I was like, one for them, one for you.
Yeah. It's gaming and then also Jesus stuff. But that gives us 2 weeks, right? Essentially, since one video is published, you have 2 weeks to get your next video up and ready to go, which like at times does feel tight. But it gives you the time to say, like, if it's not working, you don't have to just put it out. And, you know, when I worked places that you just need to put as much out as possible, it's like, if it doesn't work, sorry, it's got to go out the door. Like, it just has to go. Whereas, like, for this, for what we're doing, like, I want to make sure, like, don't do slop. Like, we're not making content. We are making, like, videos. You know what I mean? We are making important things that people are interested in and that we want to talk about, because if we're just making content, then it's like not worth it. It's not worth watching. Yeah, you know?
Absolutely. I'm just looking, how many views does your underwear video have?
Like 57,000.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Let's see here. And that was a passion project, wasn't it?
It was. And it's the sort of thing where I pitched it. I told, sorry, I just hopped into our back end and there's a video coming up tomorrow by Christian, and it's he just got the notification of just like, hey, this video cannot be monetized, but the thing is literally titled, his video series is called Save Room number 7 copyright test, so test completed, let's just say.
Or
so, but we do that to make sure that we, you know, our stuff can be monetized or that can go up, whatever. Yeah, so it's at 57,419. But yeah, when I pitched it, when I told it to one of the upper management guys, and he basically was like fucking do that. He was like, that's a good idea.
Yeah,
I was like, great. And so like they see the vision, you know what I mean? Like we are having these conversations with them, and they believe in the stuff that we're making too, which is really nice. And like, we have a lot of stuff in the pipeline that I'm excited to do, and that they are excited about, and that I think that they are going to be like happy with. But the big fight of it was for me of just saying like, listen, like you need to understand that like we are not going to see results for this immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be scary because it's going to feel like you're losing money because you're paying us to do stuff and it's not going to have a big return. But like, let us cook. And when we cook, it's gradual. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Incremental. But it's a shame. What I'm trying to say is it's a shame that like, and I get like upper management is not always as like understanding as they are with us. And it's a damn shame because I just think like Kotaku gets a lot of shit, and I think like a lot of it is undeserved. And I think them having hardships from their company as well is a shame, but I think that's the end of our show, Justin. Did you feel that? It felt like the end.
Was it a positive note that we ended on?
It felt like a positive note.
Yeah. And you know what? And the thing I like about this positive message, Peter, you're bringing positivity into this world.
I try really fucking hard, man. I try very hard to bring something. You know what else I'm bringing?
Sexy back.
Yuck. All right. I'm bringing bonus content. Patreon.com/hitbox. $3 a month. Jane all DKS. That's enough of that. If you're interested in joining our in supporting us on Patreon, patreon.com/hitboxpod, become a $1 podcast producer or a $3 deluxe podcast producer like Jay Null, GKS, Josh Durham. We're talking spoilers today. I'm interested in having this conversation with you, Justin. You can also join our Discord server. You can follow us on Twitter at hitboxpod. You can rate this episode in your podcast player of choice. I think I got it all. You got anything else to add, Justin?
No, not at all. I'm done.
Cool. Well, we'll catch you next week. Old games. Oh, bye.